Thank you very much. It's really a great pleasure to give a presentation in this wonderful venue, and I thank the organizers, the World Science Forum, for giving me this opportunity. Many of you heard about the word green chemistry. What I want to talk to you today is about a slightly different topic, which is the greening of chemistry. And that's the basic idea that we have started an agenda at Berkeley, which will hopefully extend throughout the world, to fundamentally change the way chemists, chemical engineers, indeed all molecular scientists are educated. And that will be my major topic. Now, to make sure you get the point, I'm going to give you every point of my talk right now, and then I'm going to go through it. So the key issue here is that society uses chemicals and society uses large numbers of chemical products. As the population grows and as the standard of living increases, the numbers of those chemicals and products will only increase. So it's exceedingly important that we transform from where we are now to a sustainable chemical economy. Now, the challenges of these products are significant. So if we're going to go to a sustainable chemical economy, we have to do several things. We have to start looking at what we do in a multidisciplinary manner. And we're definitely going to have to bring in the concepts of green chemistry and sustainability into everything that we do. So what we've done at Berkeley is to start the Berkeley Center for Green Chemistry, whose fundamental mission is to focus on education, research, and engagement to fundamentally transform the way chemists and molecular scientists operate on this planet, and therefore thereby to address society's needs. So now that I've told you everything I'm going to say, I'm going to go through the individual parts of this to justify it. And the basic point is that societal consumption is growing. You know, if you go back to 400 BC, it was recognized that what humans do on the planet would impact what's going on, but the overlap with the world is rather small. However, now we know we're at 7 billion people on the planet. It's perhaps going to grow to 10 billion people over the next few decades, and the overlap with the world is getting much more significant, because we're consuming a lot of products. One of the biggest chemical commodities, of course, is in the generation of energy here, where the energy usage continues to go up faster than the world population, in fact. And if we look at other aspects of chemical production, the chemical growth is growing much faster than population growth. You see chemical growth here plotted against an index of population growth. So the main point is there are huge impacts going on here, and we have to address these if we're going to move towards a sustainable format. Now, these challenges are all fundamentally chemical. And and everybody here recognizes these challenges, and attempts have been made to fix these or address these challenges, but the attempts have in large part failed. For example, if you look at transportation, where we're burning hydrocarbons, making carbon dioxide, and making the polar bears unhappy, okay? The impacts are, of course, global warming, and the question is, how can we fix this? Now, in California and in the United States, this was attempted to be fixed by legislation, where it was argued we should use corn-produced ethanol to replace roughly 8 to 10% of the gasoline. Problem is that it has big economic or big environmental impacts in the production of the products. Energy use in transportation, energy use in the shipping of the ethanol, the efficiency of the cars goes down a little bit. And at the end of the day, if you calculate the carbon footprint, the actual carbon CO2 production goes up as a result of this process, not down. You'd been better off just to burn the oil in the first place. Now, an amusing side product is, of course, that the price of grain and meat goes up like a shot throughout the world. Oops, that didn't work out quite right, okay? Now, if we move over to plastic products, of course, a big plastic product is the production of polyethylene, a very nice inert material that really doesn't hurt anybody, except it doesn't go away. So if you try to deal with that by, say, moving to polylactic acid, which can be produced biologically, you can make these PLA compostable plastics, and that can address some of these issues. But there are a few difficulties that pop up there, too, because they work nice with cold materials, but if you put hot water in it, they tend to collapse. They don't actually compost as well as we would like, and if you get them mixed in with the waste stream, it mucks up various other recycling efforts. Oops. Now, another area is in lighting, where we want to get rid of these energy-wasting tungsten light bulbs and convert them over to CFLs. That's a requirement in California. You practically feel like you're a criminal if you buy a tungsten bulb in California these days. And that saves a tremendous amount of energy and is really very useful. There's only one little problem. They're loaded with mercury, and currently in California there's no convenient way to recycle these bulbs, so you end up contaminating the landfills with mercury. That didn't work out too well. Another topic is pharmaceuticals, where of course quinine worked well on malaria for a while. We converted over to DDT, saved hundreds of millions of people's lives, but had an environmental contamination problem. A replacement is artemisinin, which is a very useful when combined with a three-drug therapy for addressing malaria. So that looks really good. It's a biologic and all that sort of thing. The only problem is the natural product comes from yew trees, so you end up chopping down a lot of forest if you take this route. The main point is, in all of these circumstances, if you look microscopically at the problem, you can end up with the wrong solution. You have to look at the full problem. You must consider the full product life cycle when analyzing this. Got to look at the extraction, processing, manufacture, use, disposal, and recycling, and you have to look at it from the point of view of all of the technical areas that are relevant, which include the chemistry, the engineering, the business, the public health, and the environmental consequences as well. So you have to take a multidisciplinary look at this, and you have to examine the full life cycle analysis. You look at any one little piece, you're likely to get the wrong answers, I showed you on the previous slide. So to address this, we've started the Berkeley Center for Green Chemistry, which is a unique assembly because we've been able to bring together, of course, the College of Chemistry at Berkeley as the center of this, because efficient and less impactful chemicals and processes are a key in every one of these points in the process. But we've worked very hard to bring in the College of Engineering to help us engineer more efficient processes, the Haas School of Business, so that the business impacts and analysis of what is done are brought in. We also include occupational and labor health safety so that we can do a better job of thinking about the processes and reducing exposure to workers. We also bring in the School of Public Health and Toxicology so that there's a toxicology input into this decision making. And finally, it's a collaboration with the College of Natural Resources so we understand the environmental impacts. Now, this is a huge diversity of interests. Not all of them agree. But the point is to bring them together so that there is a dialogue within the Berkeley Center for Green Chemistry. And we feel this is an exceedingly important and novel construct. Now, the main point of this overall is, of course, sustainability at the societal level. We all know about that. But our focus is in green chemistry, which is sustainability at the molecular level. And the key point here is to do and formalize the obvious things when you do chemical processes, such as minimizing waste, energy use, resource use, using less toxic materials, and so on. This has been summarized more pedagogically by Anastas and John Warner in their book on green chemistry, and those fundamental principles will be brought into the overall thinking of the center. So how do we then go out and really impact the chemical community as well as society? Okay, well, the main point here is to do a generational transformation in the production and use of chemical products to achieve a sustainable chemical economy. One approach, of course, would be to try to use legislative and legal means to essentially determine all the chemicals that you should not use. Now, there's a problem there, and that is that chemistry is so diverse, it's hard legislatively to define every chemical you don't want to put in a particular spot. The other problem with legislation is it's always backward-looking. You're essentially responding rather than anticipating. So the key point is to get involved in education, research, and engagement, and to educate the entire chemistry profession, and in fact, all molecular scientists, on the proper way to do things so that we do a forward-looking effort to get away from the problems. A part of this, of course, is engagement, which is both at the US and global level to advance green chemistry in all of these areas. That's why I'm giving this talk to you here today. And of course, I've got some brochures that I put outside there, and I'd be happy to distribute them to anybody who's interested in joining our international efforts. The other part, of course, is to do research. I will, if I have time, talk to you about some of the world-class research in all sorts of energy and chemical technologies that we're working on. But I think the most important part is education, which is getting involved in interdisciplinary education programs in the chemical and molecular sciences that integrate chemistry, environmental, health sciences, toxicology, so that people working in the chemical industry are much more aware of what they should be worrying about. Now, the way we approach this is to look at influence over chemical design versus number of people impacted, and there are about four different levels here. The first level is the development of fundamentally reforming the whole undergraduate laboratory experience in chemistry. We've got a grant coming in from the Dow Foundation, which will change the physical format, but we're also going to redo the experiments we do so that they are green, sustainable experiments, and we're going to bring the principles of green chemistry into our undergraduate education so that they're familiar with not only green chemistry, but also toxicology, these issues of life cycle analysis, and so on. And that impacts a fair number of people at a moderate level of impact on the overall chemical community. The second area is to bring in interdisciplinary graduate curriculum. We want to bring these concepts into our graduate education as well. This will allow us to impact a large number of graduate students. They're typically not as many as the undergrads, okay, but they're going to have much more impact on what happens in academia and in industry in the future. The third area is, of course, public outreach, talks like this, where we have symposia, web resources, and various outreach. That impacts a large number of people, but they have a relatively modest impact on the overall chemical economy. And finally, we're engaging in industrial partnerships. We've formed a consortium, which is an amalgam of basically the public sector, private sector, academic institutions, as well as NGOs, to engage in communication. We've started executive education programs. And the basic idea is to impact the installed base in the entire chemical industry. And the secret here is basically to realize that if you have a problem, such as going towards a sustainable chemical economy, the real important thing to do, you're kind of in a hole. So how do you get out of a hole? What's the first lesson of getting out of a hole? Stop digging, okay? So the basic idea here is that if we can educate all the people who are involved in making chemical industry decisions such that they make more sustainable decisions, we stop the problem in the first place. It never happens. So that's been our major effort, and the goal is to educate all molecular scientists in the concepts of sustainability. Now, the science activities are probably going to have to be done relatively quickly. One activity is the Joint Bioenergy Institute, headed by Jake Heisling. This is an effort to use synthetic biology techniques principally to develop the next generation of biofuels, that is, biofuels coming not from food products, but coming from cellulosic sources. And that's working nicely with bacterial and with yeast sources. The second effort is the DOE, Joint Center for Artificial Photosynthesis. Melvin Calvin, a few years ago, when he got his Nobel Prize for understanding the basic processes of photosynthesis that we all talk about here today, recognized that it would be nice to find an artificial way to do this. And this is an effort that's being headed by Peidong Yang at Berkeley and Nate Lewis at Caltech to develop artificial photosynthetic means where we have inorganic nanoparticles that convert CO2 and water over to, here, methanol, a liquid fuel, as well as oxygen. And what they're trying to do is to develop a system for scalable fuel generation that's probably 10 times better than plants, so that you avoid the water use and land use challenges associated with biofuels. Finally, an effort that I've worked on with Shankar Sastry in the College of Engineering is to develop a Synthetic Biology Institute, which is to basically take a model from the connection of physics and engineering, which gave you the microelectronics industry, and to realize that we're now at a point where the intersection between chemistry, engineering, and biology gives us the tools we need to really engineer biological systems to design them so that they perform the kinds of functions we want, and in particular so that we can use them to produce fixed carbon materials that would be useful as materials and other high-value products. And using funding that recently came in from Agilent Technologies, they're working on foundational as well as applications research. And this, of course, also includes working on the ethical, environmental, economic, legal, and social impacts of synthetic biology that are also a lot of fun to discuss. So in closing, the key point here is chemical sustainability requires an interdisciplinary and a holistic approach. Chemistry is really the central science in this kind of a molecular effort, but the key thing is to address chemical sustainability. To do that, we have to think about economics, health, natural resources, policy, and above all, social responsibility. And the Center for Green Chemistry gives us the opportunity to begin doing this by having the discipline of chemistry lead the way. Chemistry at Berkeley has led the way for quite a while. We have always made strong statements many years ago in thermodynamics. You know, the work of Glenn Seaborg and the entire group at LBNL basically defined the rest of the periodic chart, as well as the nuclear age. A previous speaker, Y.T. Lee, defined chemical reactivity. So Berkeley has led the way in shaping chemistry. As you know, Berkeley has also led the way in shaping society. In fact, the internet tells me there are currently riots and demonstrations going on as we speak in Berkeley. And we feel that the Berkeley Center for Green Chemistry, following on this tradition, gives us an opportunity to really lead the chemical and the molecular industry into a chemically sustainable format. And that will have a huge impact on reshaping the whole discipline of chemistry and, of course, addressing very important societal needs. So that's what I wanted to tell you about what's going on at Berkeley. As I say, if any of you would like to get together with us, we'd be happy to work together to basically transfer best practices and so on and develop international collaborations. And I'd be happy to talk with you after my talk. Thank you very much.